and welcome to Indie Business Radio for Monday, March 23rd. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and you have arrived at the one place where we empower you to enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way. I am so excited today because I have discovered a wonderful book and a wonderful woman who's introduced me to dozens of other wonderful people that are featured in her book, and I just can't wait to share my discovery with you. Our guest today is Faith Levine, and she has traveled 1,900 miles to document the handmade scene in the film Handmade Nation. She's also the co-author of the book by the same name, Handmade Nation, The Rise of DIY Art, Craft, and Design. And she's got 24 featured artists in this book from Olympia, Washington to Providence, Rhode Island, and every place in between. And they're sharing their work and discussing their lives in this book and companion documentary. And it is fantastic. And we are going to talk with Faith today about how this whole Handmade Nation thing is rising, what it means for the individuals that are participating in it, and also what it means for our nation and also the world at large. Welcome to the show, Faith.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. And so tell us a little bit, Faith, just to get started. What is your background, and tell us how this fascination with all things handmade came about for you?
Well, I guess my background includes being a self-taught artist, and I had started my own business where I was making things by hand and selling them called Flying Fish Design in 2002, and it was really through that I sort of stumbled upon the community that I'm now a part of, and I also have documented through Handmade Nation.
And so tell us a little bit about what you started making.
Well, I had a small line of a number of different things. Some of them were like hand-sewn plush toys, and I had a postcard line of photographs that I had taken. And so just, you know, basically anything that I felt like making in my studio, I'd take it out, either put it online for sale or take it out to some indie craft fairs or the farmer's market was another place where I was selling work for a while. And it just grew from there, and it became my full-time job for about 3 years. And then as other things unfolded, I sort of put that to rest. So
was there a period of time, Faith, when you maintained a traditional job and also made your items and sold those as well?
I can't say that I've ever had a traditional 9-to-5 job. But, I mean, I've always done a number of things at one time. So I do a lot of freelance work and production work, and I've worked in the service industry. I'm not a classic 9-to-5er. So, but yeah, even to this day, I still do other work aside from my work within the arts. So
Faith, how did the idea and concept for this book, Handmade Nation, come about?
Well, the documentary came first. And basically, I was meeting more and more people through doing Flying Fish, and then I had started a indie craft fair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where I'm based, called Art vs. Craft, and then I also opened up a brick-and-mortar store called Paper Boat Boutique and Gallery. And so I had just become exposed to so many different makers of different types, and I felt like the energy and the excitement that was going on within the indie art and craft community was really unique and really exciting, and I just felt like it was important to capture that. So in 2006, myself and the director of photography, Michaela O'Herlihy, basically just struck out and started working on the film.
And, you know, I didn't realize that the film came before the book.
Yeah, it did. So it got finished after, but it started before. The book is actually based on the research we did with the film. So all of the featured makers within the book, the text from their pages are pulled from the interviews from the film.
And you're calling the people that are featured in the book makers. Tell me a little bit about that. What does that mean?
Well, because of the definition of craft has changed, and it means different things to a number of different people, and a number of the people featured in the book and the film define themselves as different things. I found that using the term makers, which is a pretty growing trend within the indie arts and crafts community, is an easier way to define everyone without having to get into the art versus craft debate or even define yourself as anything. You're just a maker of something. So it's a nice loose term that's sort of all encompassing.
And you know, I did, as I was reading through the book, I did see that there was some back and forth about the difference between the use of the word art or craft. Tell us a little bit about why that exists. Why does it matter to some people that they're referred to one or the other?
Oh, I mean, I just think it's, you know, preconceived notions or definitions on and what means what. And I honestly kind of prefer to steer clear from that debate. I'm more interested in just documenting the fact that people are making things, and that's what my work is about. And so, you know, how one defines oneself and their work is sort of up to that person, so which is why I use the word maker.
And I will use the word maker too then. And
oh,
you
yeah,
of them in the book. How you must have had to narrow this down. I would imagine in your travels you must have met so many fascinating people. How were you able to narrow it down to what fits in this book? And does the documentary contain different stories or more stories than are in the book?
Basically, for choosing the people that we selected for the book, I mean, there was a number of factors involved. I wanted, you know, a lot of different mediums and methods to be represented, so that was one aspect. The book is divided up, the chapters are divided by regions, so we were kind of looking at where people were located. How people's work would be represented in the book was another factor. So, I mean, there's a number of things that were taken into account when we were, you know, curating the book. The film has, we feature 12 vignettes of different people in the film. And so they lend well to one another, but they have, they're different. So, but I think everyone who's in the book at least has a cameo, if you will, in the documentary. But there may be one or two people that didn't make the final edit, but I actually am not positive about that. So,
well, it sounds like it must have been a lot of fun. A lot of work, but a lot of fun, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when I was reading through the book, I noticed that throughout the book, you've got fantastic photographs of all of the makers featured, usually in their work element or maybe at a show or something where their art or their craft or whatever is being displayed. And they also have in their own words what it means to them to be a part of this community. And then there are also some longer sections. And one of them I wanted to ask you about, there's a sentence by one of the contributors. His name is Garth Johnson. And it says this: "When I sat down to puzzle about the best way to measure the vitality of the handmade nation, I couldn't think of a better yardstick than the Internet. Before the Internet came along, I was an isolated ceramic geek who grew up in a farm in Nebraska. Now I'm a well-connected ceramic geek in Southern California with a network of enablers who push me to color outside the lines." I thought that was a fascinating summary of the interplay between the makers and the Internet. Can you comment on that as well?
Sure. I mean, I think that Garth, you know, put that so eloquently, and also just to kind of give the listeners an idea, the book is outlined by region, and then each region is separated by a different essay. So the essays are actually specific to the book. They were written specifically for the book, and Garth is one of our contributors, one of our essayists, and he has a fantastic website called Extreme Craft. So we asked Garth to write about craft and the Internet, and really the revival of handmade and DIY, do-it-yourself craft and art has a lot to do with the fast connections that we have with one another and the communities and the online communities and the social networking sites and the sharing of information. And so there's nothing to be said. People have always made things. There's never been a lull in people making things by hand. However, the Internet has now provided us with, you know, it's boundaryless. So you can have a community no matter what. You know, you don't have to live in an urban metropolitan city. And if you have the aesthetic of someone who lives in that environment. You can log on to a number of sites and connect with people who have similar tastes as you. And so it's just really opened up a lot of doors for a lot of people and created a whole new wave, if you will, of work that's out there.
Dave, do you think the book and the documentary would exist without the Internet?
Absolutely not. I mean, I wouldn't know 95% of the people that I know now. I mean, I might have met them eventually. I think it would have taken, 10 years or something. I mean, it's really, I'm so thankful for what the Internet provides. And then the exciting thing is that because this community is based around doing things by hand, you have that time online and you have that time to connect, and then you're stepping away from the computer, which is a big part of it, and taking the time to make something in a physical space and possibly with other people in a craft group. And then you can take that work back online, photograph it, and people can comment on it. And so it's really just, it's amazing.
It's fulfilling in so many different ways. And one of the things that Garth's quote talks about is calling people his network of enablers. What does that mean, if you can comment on that?
Oh, I mean, I don't know what he meant.
Interesting word.
I would assume, he would be referring to people who could relate to him and he could have a dialogue with. And people who get it. You know, if you are a teenager and you live in the suburbs and you are interested in a counterculture, it didn't used to be that you could find your like-minded people in an instant. You know, you were just that freaky kid in high school that everyone made fun of. So now you have that community. You have, I guess, your enablers to support you in whatever, fringe community or whatever you're trying to do. So I'm assuming that's what he meant, but you would have to ask him to get his specific definition.
You've been traveling quite a bit to meet with people and talk with them. What kind of feedback are you getting about the documentary and the book? Are you seeing people be inspired and just so excited in a new way about making things by hand?
Yeah, that's actually pretty much the biggest feedback that we've gotten for the book and the film, is that people walk away from them wanting to make something and wanting to step into their studio, or, with a newfound respect for the people that they know who are making things. So I think the general feeling is positive and empowering and exciting and encouraging, which is exactly what I was hoping for. So I'm pretty pleased with that response.
And how do people become a part of this handmade community that you're talking about? The handmade nation. Is this something that just sort of happens organically when you begin to make things yourself and connect with other people who do it as well? Or is there, a process that's involved for each individual person to become a part of the community?
Well, I think that, if you're a maker of things and you're putting your work out there online, I mean, this has a lot to do with online communities, then you will start to get feedback and start, once you're putting yourself out there, then it comes back to you. So,
right.
If you're sitting in your studio and, people aren't going to come knocking on your door without being invited. So, there's a number of websites that are great starting points for people who may not be familiar. I mean, there's obvious social networking sites such as Facebook and MySpace, which are, really great ways to connect with like-minded people. And then there's websites such as Etsy.com, which is a shopping site where you can set up your own shop to sell your handmade work. And then websites like Craftster.org, which is message boards about 100 million one things under the sun. If you have a project or if you want to do a tutorial or if you just want feedback on something you made. So that's a really great resource. And then I really like to promote the use of Flickr.com, which is a photo sharing website. So you photograph your work and put it up, and then you can join these groups and put your photos into these pools and tag them. And then, if you're if you knit an octopus, and then you tag it you know, the knitted octopus, you can see other knitted octopi out there that other people have made. So there's just, like, there's so many ways to tap into handmade communities out there.
Well, and, you know, it's the pictures, by the way, for those of you who are listening and the people in the chat room, thank you for joining us. I want you to know that Faith has done a fantastic job, she and her colleagues and the people she collaborated with on this book. You can check it out at IndieCraftDocumentary.com. And I've been on the Internet researching for this show for a while, and so I know that there are other websites that you can check out as well. And Faith will probably mention some of those as we move forward. One of the great things about this book, Faith, is the pictures. I mean, to watch these makers, as you call them, in their elements, in their studios, these are some happy people.
Yeah, and I guess a note about the pictures, we actually solicited the featured makers to submit their own photographs. So I would say 95% of the photos in the book are actually the photos that the featured makers themselves submitted. So it's nice because they kind of each have their own feel to them. There's not, you know, one exact style throughout the book. So
they do, and you know, you've done such a, I mean, there's a person who makes shoes.
Yeah,
that you could actually wear, and they're beautiful,
yeah.
And they're so unique with the ribbons, and you know, there's a couple of knitters in here, and I find that fascinating as well because there's been kind of a resurgence. But we're going to take our break. We're going to come back and talk more with Faith about this fantastic book, Handmade Nation, and the documentary as well. This is Indie Business Radio. We'll be right back.
Why is everyone listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com? Because it's the future of talk radio. Every day, more and more people are finding internet radio as not just an alternative media, but as a replacement to traditional AM and FM broadcast stations. Internet radio offers a wider variety of programs, convenient on-demand listening that meets your schedule, and fewer commercial interruptions. And GlobalTalkRadio.com is already leading the way by matching this content with a highly targeted internet audience. GlobalTalkRadio.com offers its listeners one of the widest programming varieties on the internet, from business and finance to self-improvement, paranormal, health, literature, romance, politics, and more. There are also opportunities for prospective hosts who would like to host their own weekly or one-time talk shows. Want to learn more? Check us out at www.globaltalkradio.com and see the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm your host, Donna Maria, and we're here with Faith Levine, the co-author of Handmade Nation, The Rise of DIY Art, Craft, and Design. You can check out all the details at IndieCraftDocumentary.com. And I once wanted to mention Lisa in the chat room. Thank you so much for your comment about Ready Made Magazine. Thank you for sharing that. Faith, are you familiar with that publication?
I am. Ready Made, you know, I don't have all the exact details, but Ready Made is a great resource. It's a magazine that has a lot of tutorials and how-to projects using recycled materials, and you know, it's a great little piece of inspiration to have laying around. So
sounds great. And Alana in the chat room too wants to know how you found the indies in your documentary. And I think did we cover that? You basically used the internet, didn't you?
Well, actually, most of the people I did. I mean, I met a lot of the people online initially. However, I had worked with a lot of the people that we featured in a number of settings, whether it was at my craft fair that I produced or in my gallery. So a lot of the connections were already there, and I was just following up with those. And then, you know, also it was an excuse to connect with people whose work I was familiar with that I had never met before. So I was able to then call them and set up a time to come to their studio and do an interview. So it was basically just me getting to interview all the people that I was really excited about. And, you know, there's endless people out there that I could have interviewed, and at some point we just had to say, okay, we're done. So.
Well, and that's why I asked at the beginning, you must have met so many fascinating people. And not only here in the States, you've been traveling. I mean, you just came back from Australia to share your Handmade Nation experience. Tell us about some of the fun places that you've been, and what is this experience like? I mean, take us on a little bit of a virtual journey, if you would.
Yeah, the Australia experience was amazing. There is a kind of larger industry show there called Stitches and Craft, and it happens in three cities in Australia. I was brought out for the Melbourne show. I just got home last Wednesday, and we did the premiere of Handmade Nation, the documentary, at the show, so it was the Australian premiere. And then the film will be traveling to the other two shows, but I won't be going with it. So that was, I mean, an amazing experience. And I think the thing for me that's been incredible is I had this experience of meeting all these people working on the production, but then all the people that I've met because of the project since, it's been like tenfold. So it's just been amazing to get to, you know, go to Australia and then have people who are interested in the same things as me contact me and invite me over for dinner. And I mean, it's really an amazing international community. I had the pleasure of going to Germany earlier this year, and I mean, I often take trips. I mean, it's kind of all over the place. My next trip is we're doing the Portland, Oregon premiere at the Contemporary Craft Museum the first weekend of April. So that's my next trip.
That's wonderful. So Portland, that's wonderful to know, too. We have a lot of listeners in the Portland area, so check it out, guys. Will information about that be at IndieCraftDocumentary.com?
Well, I actually just want to clarify. The website is actually HandmadeNationMovie.com.
Okay.
And our blogspot has IndieCraftDocumentary.blogspot.com. So I think that the website you're giving out may route to HandmadeNationMovie.com, but it's better to use that URL. It's more direct.
Right. I'm making sure I type that into the chat room so people don't miss that, HandmadeNationMovie.com. So when you travel and when you're having screenings and things, you announce them there so people can check them out.
I do. I update. Basically, the website is sort of the hub. The blog is where all the information is. As I travel, I update with photos very regularly. All of the screenings are updated as they're coming in, and we're scheduling all of those events. I do all of the programming myself, so, you know, sometimes it takes me a few days to update, but I'm, you know, the blog is pretty interesting for people who are interested in the project because I started the blog when we first started the pre-production, so it actually documents the entire process of making the film and then the things that unfolded and, you know, the exciting press that's come out of, you know, this experience and whatnot. So, you know, if you're interested in that whole process, you can kind of get lost in that. It's been over the past 3 years, so it's a pretty interesting resource.
Well, and I have to say to everyone listening, it is a fantastic place to get lost in because I did spend a considerable amount of time looking at all the great things that you've done and just seeing how you just literally threw yourself into this project in so many different ways. And this was really quite personal for you, wasn't it?
You know, I suppose it was without maybe me realizing it. I mean, I guess I just went about working on this project the same way that I would do anything else. So it wasn't necessarily by any means a traditional way to go about making a documentary. And you know, the book came out of a clip that we put up on YouTube in April of 2007, and our publisher contacted me through that, and that was when the book proposal happened. So the whole thing has sort of just fallen into place as I've, you know, moved forward in the project.
Well, when it's meant to be, it's meant to be, and it really does seem like this has struck quite a nerve with readers and people all over. Can you speak a little bit to when you talked with the makers and other people that are featured? Can you speak a little bit to how you have observed how they organize their lives around their passions, and sort of there's a sense that there's a forcing of the outside world to conform to them instead of the other way around? Can you comment a little bit about that?
Well, that's a pretty. The interesting thing for me, and I don't know if this is skirting around your question or not, has just been amazing to see how creative people have made creativity and making things by hand and making art a part of their life, and how they have sort of sculpted their lifestyle and the sacrifices that they've made or things that they've shuffled around in order to be able to make things. And I think that a lot of people who can relate to that, like when you have that creative drive and you have that feeling within you that you want to create and you want to make something on any level, whether it's like a little itty-bitty project at home or on a large scale you want to start a full-time business, I just think it's one of the interesting things about the film and the book is seeing how people have done that in a number of different ways. And I, to be honest, I can't really pull anything out of the ether of specific examples, but it is really inspiring and interesting because it's not consistent across the board. It's not all one type of person doing it all one way. It's many, many different types of people with different lifestyle choices, you know, sorting it out for themselves with different circumstances. I mean, you have stay-at-home moms who are making a little bit of money on the side, having a small business. You have, you know, people who are just making stuff as a hobby and giving it away. You have people who work an office job and then have a craft business on the side. And then you have full-time artists who have gallery careers, but then they also have handmade products. I mean, there's just so many different types of people doing it in so many different types of ways. And I think that's what is amazing about this community is it's not just one type of person. It's that everyone has this common motivation to create, and that's what mm-hmm. bonds everyone together.
Mm-hmm. Now, in looking through the book, I noticed that all of the featured people happen to be women. Is that by accident, by design, or how did that happen?
Within this community, it's mostly women. It's not all women. There's a number of men, and there's more men who are getting involved as things like printmaking and silk screening are kind of becoming more integrated into the DIY art and craft community, like at craft fairs and online shops and whatnot. However, it wasn't intentional. I mean, again, it goes back to those are the people that I was working with and those are the people I was interested in. I wasn't looking to make, you know, fill in demographics to make a well-rounded, like, balanced book in that sense. I was more interested in what people were making. It didn't have to do with their sex. So, I mean, the craft aspect, a lot of the people we feature work with traditional handwork, a lot of needlework tends to be women who do that type of stuff. So, I mean, that's another reason, I guess, that there's more women featured. But
Faith, how long did it take you from your idea about the documentary to actually getting it done? Was this a long process?
It's been a three-year process, and the documentary just came out in February of this year, of 2009, and we started production in 2006, in early 2006. So, and, you know, it's the question that's going to come up if no one's asked it already is, can we buy the DVD? And right now we're working on that. And if you're interested in finding out when it's available, you can sign up for our newsletter on the website, but it's not done yet. Again, it's just me and, like, a small group of people who are working on getting everything done, so things are moving a little slow. I mean, the film was very much a DIY project, a do-it-yourself project itself. It was a one-camera, one-computer film, and I financed the whole thing, so that's another reason of why things with the film move a little slower than maybe people would expect. The book was published by Courtney and I's publisher, Princeton Architectural Press, so we had a quick turnaround time with that, because they obviously have a publishing schedule and a budget and whatnot, so...
Wow. So which website do we go to get the newsletter, Faith?
It's just PanMadeNationMovie.com.
Okay.
That's all right.
So the Blogspot website is really just for background information and blog posts now and then, but the real action is at handmadenationmovie.com.
Yeah, and that's the hub for all the other links. So if you're interested in looking at photos on Flickr, you can go to our website and it'll take you there. So that's where you're going to find all the information about everything else is on the website. And that'll take you to the blog and whatnot.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you feel like virtual pats on the back from people in the chat room and from me, because we're just fascinated that you've done this and you funded the whole thing yourself.
Yeah.
That's rare. That's rare. Did that happen on purpose? I'm just curious to know. That's like a Herculean task.
I think within the, you know, indie film community, it's not, I think it's pretty, it's, it, I think that's, I don't know if I want to call it a sacrifice because it sounds really over the top, but I think a lot of indie filmmakers do finance their films. It's, I guess, the reason I chose to do it that way was because I was too impatient to wait to try and apply for funding. I felt really motivated to start right then and there. I didn't want to miss anything. I was really concerned that if I didn't start shooting footage right then and there, that things were going to start to change. And I just wanted to really get going. And, getting funding and applying, I did get some grants along the way, but I just didn't want to lose that momentum of my drive that I was feeling, so I just started.
Right. It's amazing. You really have captured a very unique moment in a worldwide history, but certainly American history, particularly at a time when more and more people are looking to their own talents and gifts to start a business of their own. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that. This is Indie Business Radio. We're going to take one more break. I'll be right back.
Want to stay on top of what's new in the radio industry? Sign up for a free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio, available exclusively to listeners of globaltalkradio.com, and find out what's new in the world of online radio. Listeners can find out about new shows and special guests. People with something special to offer can find out how to become a guest and how to prepare for an interview. And prospective hosts will find a valuable resource for everything from planning their new program to selecting topics and guests, recouping expenses by selling advertising, and more. Sign up today for your free subscription to the Future of Talk Radio by visiting www.globaltalkradio.com and learn about the future of talk radio today.
Welcome back to Indie Business Radio. I'm here this afternoon with Faith Levine, the author, the co-author of Handmade Nation, The Rise of DIY Art, Craft, and Design. I'm also here with all of you in the chat room who are just as excited and impressed as I am with this fabulous work that Faith has done. And Faith, before we took our break, we were talking a little bit about what's happening in our economy these days and how it is that, at least I'm wondering what your perspective is on whether more and more people are sort of looking to their talents, their gifts, their handmade ideas to create business opportunities for themselves than they have in the past.
Ooh, well, I don't know if I can give solid numbers on about the past. I mean, I think, again, I mean, the answer is I would say yes, because there are these resources online that didn't exist previously. So it is now more, there are more user-friendly options even now than there was initially when the Internet first, started. So I think that if someone is interested in starting their own online business, that they don't have to make a huge financial investment to start off, because they can just experiment with what it would be like with using sites such as Etsy. I think also when people see other people that they can relate to doing something such as, starting their own handmade business or, creating their own It's. I think when you see someone doing it, it makes it more realistic for yourself. So because there's more people out there doing it that you can see online, it makes it more easy to wrap your brain around.
Mm-hmm. One of the makers featured in the book, Callie Janoff, says, "I've heard so much from the Church of Craft. I've learned so much from the Church of Craft." She calls it the Church of Craft. "I've learned that in our capitalist society, bigger isn't always better. A meeting is still great and serves its purpose if only one or two people show up." I love that.
Yeah, the Church of Craft is a group that Callie and a friend of hers started, and it's basically, they have a website. You can read about it online if you're interested. And it's basically there's a number of directives that the group has, but it's looking at your creativity as your spirituality. And it's a really lovely, interesting concept that I encourage people to look up if that tweaks their interest. But they meet in groups, and there's groups all over the country. There may even be some international groups. I'm not positive. And people hang out and work on projects together and just get in their crafting zone. And it's one example of many different types of craft groups that have kind of sprung up out of this community.
And for those of you who are interested in that, you can visit www.churchofcraft.org to get more information. And, you know, her statement about, our capitalist society and bigger not always being better just seems to me to be, I know this book was written actually a while ago, even though it was just published in February, it's almost prophetic because of what we're going through right now in our economy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of what's going on within this community, there's a lot of commentary and a lot of awareness about, big box retailers and stepping away from buying mass-produced goods,
mm-hmm.
and just being a more conscious consumer and just more conscious in general about the things that you're buying, where they're coming from, and
right.
who's making them. So, I mean, there's a consciousness to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think people are thinking a lot more about those things. So in your observations, and again, meeting with people and having spent, considerable part of your life actually making products as a part of this community, how do the two worlds, do they merge, or is there some overlap there between the maker, the crafter, and, maybe not our capitalist society as a whole, but certainly, makers and crafters have to eat too. So what sorts of things are you seeing happening as people who do decide to make their handcraft or their maker talent a business? What sorts of things are you seeing there? Are you seeing some struggles there? Are you seeing, lots of opportunity and excitement in that area?
I think there's both. It's pretty equal. I think, again, because there's not one type of business structure, it's difficult to give sort of commentary on it because there's so many different examples of how people have started their businesses. It's interesting because you never know what sort of economic standing someone's coming from when they're starting their business. Do they already have a savings? Do they have a partner who has a steady income? I think a lot of the challenges for people who have started their own businesses are where are you going to have, what about health care? What about child care? What about savings and, issues about, those basic things? Also, I think a lot of us, and from my personal experience of having a business where I made things by hand, I never thought about how keeping up with demand once I had a large amount of wholesalers, if someone put in an order for 100 pieces of a product that I made all by hand in my studio, can I actually fill that demand? And how does that affect my body? And since, how if I'm sitting in front of the sewing machine for, 5 to 8 hours a day, can I do that 7 days a week? How is that going to make me feel? So it's been really interesting, I think, for people to go through that experience and see if this is something they really want to do. For me personally, I realized I don't want to make the same thing over and over. It took away from my creative inspiration. And so I now know that I would rather do other things like promote other people's work. And when I make things, it's more for myself or for a project or for an art show. So I think it's personal for everyone. But there are all these resources out there of people's stories now that you can tap into if you're interested in doing that. There's a really fantastic book that's a great resource called Craft Inc. And I can't think of the author's name right now off the top of my head, but it's laid out with people's experiences of starting their business. There's a lot of different examples, and it talks about different industry things that go on within the industry that if you're not familiar with, like how to create a line sheet and what it means to, you know, how if you're going to do a craft fair, what you might expect. So things like that that have come out of the community are now like these great resources for people who might want to think about starting a business.
That's great. And for those of you who might be looking it up on Amazon, it's written by Meg Mateo Ilasco, Craft Inc., Turn Your Creative Hobby into a Business. And I'll go ahead and put that into the chat room. And by the way, there seem to be other businesses along those, other books, I'm sorry, along those lines as
yes,
well
sir.
Here at Amazon.com if you're interested in purchasing or learning more about what books might be available. So, Faith, it's an interesting point that you're raising, too, about the repetitive nature of the work that's required to be able to produce things to keep up with that kind of demand. I was watching a documentary last night on television. I think it was CNBC, and they did a story on Burt's Bees.
Okay, interesting.
And the beauty products company and the original founder. Of course, it's been purchased by, I think, Colgate-Palmolive, if I'm not mistaken, last year or the year before. But the founder was talking about how, you know, that was a real issue for her as the business grew. Of course, you know, making, you know, bee-based lip balms on a small farm in Maine, you know, of course she never knew, you know, that ultimately the business would be purchased by a huge company for like $9 million or something mm-hmm. like that. But that's not an uncommon issue, is it?
No, I mean, the business itself being purchased or just trying to figure out how much you can actually do as a
yeah,
person.
What can you, I mean, because, wait, I mean, we would, I mean, I have hobbies. I love to knit. I love to do things. I would never even think of trying to sell anything that I make because I don't make them that well, but I love to do it.
Right.
And I would do it all the time if I could. Now, if I was also really good at it and, you know, every now and then people wanted to buy stuff, then I would obviously see that potential. And so I guess I'm just wondering how you notice people incorporating that struggle or, you know, speaking with people on a regular basis and interviewing them and, you know, engaging with them when you go to present the book and the documentary. Do people ask you questions about that? Because it would seem to me that that's a growing issue, particularly, as I mentioned earlier, in our economy, when even if you never thought of making anything or selling anything, many more people seem to be thinking about that as an option now because, whether they want to or not, it's viewed as an option that may not have been looked at years back.
Yeah, I mean, there is people ask me about it all the time, and I think it's interesting. I haven't seen a ton of people, due to the economy, starting their own businesses. In fact, I've seen a lot of people who have had successful small businesses have to go back to a part-time day job or figure out freelance work because consumers aren't spending the money on the handmade goods as much as they were before. And I want to be really careful with this because there is a growth in people supporting handmade, and, you know, it kind of goes along with buying organic food and being conscious about local, buying local. And I think that consumers are spending money, they're just because people are watching how much they spend, they're not spending as much. So if you had a small business making something that, you know, might be considered frivolous or an excess, you're not selling as much as you probably were the last 3 years. So even though there's this option to have a business as a way to make more money, I think that because people aren't spending as much, it might not be as lucrative right now. So, I mean, there's kind of like, you know, a positive and negative mm-hmm. to that.
And Faith, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts on where you think all this is going. Where is the Handmade Nation going? What do you think the future holds for these makers?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is that, like I said previously in the beginning of the interview, people have never not made things. And I think that people will continue to make things. And what I'm hoping is that with a younger generation of people, you know, going back to handmade and having this re-interest in doing things themselves on a number of levels, I think that that feeling is really contagious and really exciting, and I don't see that stopping anytime soon. And I think that people, once you have that appreciation for what people are doing, that you don't ever really lose that appreciation, and so I don't see it peaking out. I mean, it might peak out on an industry sense. Handmade might not be as marketable in, you know, another 2 or 3 years. However, the feeling of it and the energy of the community will always be there and continue to grow.
Yeah, and I would guess that, you know, the popularity of Etsy, and not only Etsy, but other websites that are popping up all over the place that are Etsy-like. I know Artfire.com,
right,
one of the many that I can think of, and so obviously the people who understand how all the technology works are seeing great opportunities because they're launching these websites at a pretty rapid clip these days.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And that's exciting to see. I hope that as time passes that the makers and the people that actually contribute to these communities in ways that really you can't value financially, that there are ways that they are actually able to take advantage of some of the financial benefits of some of these websites because they really are generating quite a healthy income for the people who are running them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that was just my comment. Faith didn't say that, obviously, but I just feel, you know, I've studied a lot about how, you know, websites are working together to aggregate content and, you know, allow people to communicate in ways that, you know, create new communities, and that's also very exciting. But the value of those contributions are sometimes not recognized, and so I always want to make sure that I take a moment to recognize that. Because what these people are doing, Faith, and what I observe, because I work with people who make things by hand regularly, is, you know, it's almost like they rediscover themselves. They're almost reborn when they find out that they can make this thing that people love, and it just it's an intangible feeling that they get from creating this thing and putting it out there for the world to enjoy.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
So I hope that, you know, with your book and your documentary and the other work that you're doing and all the makers, that, you know, we will continue to see an increase in appreciation and understanding. And certainly the work that you're doing is a huge, huge part of that. And we thank you so much for that. Again, everyone, visit HandmadeNationMovie.com for all the information about where you can go to watch the movie, get the book, and learn more about Faith. Faith Levine and Courtney, her co-author, and all of the things that went into producing it. This is a fantastic book. Thank you so much for joining us today, Faith.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
I want to remind you guys that next week I'm going to be back with another great edition of Indie Business Radio. My guest will be Mark Kramer, author of Small Business Turnaround. He's going to join us to share tips on how to respond when your business takes a nosedive. We touched a little bit on that due to the economy here in the show today. It happens to all of us, but what things must we do in order to stick it out and come out on top? Don't miss that important show next week right here at Indie Business Radio. Thanks for joining, Faith. Thanks for joining everyone in the chat room. It's been my pleasure to be here, and I'll see you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your life, build your business, and have your way.
You're listening to GlobalTalkRadio.com.